everybody, and welcome back to Make It Sound Fiction. This is episode 9, and I am your host, Nico. And I'm here, as always, with my co-host,
Tyler.
Yeah, and this week we're going to be doing the same thing we do every week, which is break down pop culture media, video games, books, TV, movies, you name it. We talk about it. And, man, it was... I wouldn't say it was a slow week for the kinds of stuff that we pay attention to, but it felt like kind of a weird week.
It was a weird week, despite being like Overwatch Summer Games, which we got into, and then like more WoW stuff, but it just sort of, it was a weird week, yeah, I don't know.
Usually stuff jumps out at us to like put on the
Usually we have too agenda. Many things in like the podcast notes.
Yeah, and now we have like just a couple things, and...
I mean, not that we're going to be unenthused about anything, but there was just sort of like, there's not really much to say about that. I mean, like one of the things was there was a new World of Warcraft thing this week, and we just like every our thoughts about it were pretty much in the last episode.
Yeah.
You know,
so. We kind of drained the poison on that one, I think, in a lot of ways.
It's so more of the same, so.
Yeah. But we did have kind of, it was really interesting, because usually myself and Tyler... have very different media habits, where the things that we overlap on tend to be more like video games versus TV shows or books or movies or things like that, with the exception of like food YouTube. We watch the same food YouTube accounts. But when it comes to TV, it's a little bit harder because I watch a shit ton of TV. Just a huge amount. If I'm not playing video games, I am watching television shows because of streaming. And I don't think that's necessarily the case with you,
Tyler.
No, I'm
usually watching like YouTube videos,
I know, you can say it. I'm old. But,
Sometimes I just like not working through something like fiction instead of just like a playthrough of a game or something.
See, I hate playthroughs. I just, you know, they're boring to me in a lot of ways. Like, I don't know. I have to, like, really like the person. So for me, I really just want to sit down, and when I want to, like, turn my brain off, I watch a lot of television. Some of it bad, some of it good. And especially with, like, prestige television, it's, like, not hard to find something that I'm going to be super into and just kind of binge.
I have a weird issue of, like, I don't like turning my brain off, I think, for TV for some reason, which is weird. I don't know why, because there's nothing wrong with it. I just, for some reason, I'm, like... trained to like really pay attention whenever I watch anything with like that's actually like fiction stuff. I don't know.
I wouldn't say they turn my brain off. I just mean like chill out. Like,
right,
I don't...
but I still for some reason I can't do that, and I don't know why. I wish I could.
I get really engrossed in watching something versus like video games, where I have to be good and process what I'm doing and really think about it. And so I think that I'm the opposite with that. With video games, it's so much more energy to care and to have to like really put that emphasis on. Whereas TV, I like to sit and I just like to let the story like wash over me. Like just like.
Yeah. It's like, probably just a difference of like what we're used to, because you've just been watching stuff like that forever. So.
Yeah. But it was really funny because this week I think it was either a podcast or a advertisement of some sort. How did this even come up in conversation? But I said, I heard about this. I told Tyler, I was like, I heard about this weird.
You didn't say where it came from. You just mentioned it.
Yeah, I just said I heard about this weird Castle Rock TV show. And
I remembered it from somebody from a podcast talking about it.
Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to watch it, because I used to read a lot of Stephen King books, and I think maybe this will be interesting. And you were like, oh, yeah, I'll check it out, too. And then we burned through 5 episodes.
Yeah, because there already were 5, because you had said it like, I'll watch that when it starts, and it was like already 5 episodes in, apparently. So
So, that's the thing about streaming, is sometimes it's like, if things are on a schedule, I don't necessarily know when things start happening. And it's a really interesting of a choice for Hulu to meet out a show week to week versus doing the kind of more of like the Netflix thing where it just all releases all at once and you can kind of just watch it at your leisure. But like, so Castle Rock's been going for five weeks now. And I think like the whole premise of the show is that it takes place in kind of the like Kingiverse, as I like to think of it, in that Stephen King, for people not familiar, Stephen King tends to write a lot of stories that take place around a particular region of Maine, Castle Rock, but also some other fictional towns around there. But
and he acts like they're in, like he writes them so they're in the same universe, right?
Or for no? the most part, okay. Yeah, as far that's the thing is the show kind of collapses that a little bit. There was a series of stories that he wrote that were during the same place and the same time, which was a series of the stories that he put out around the early 90s, I want to say, which were Dolores Claiborne, you know that they all take place during the same time because he mentions an eclipse that happens during it. So it was like Dolores Claiborne. It was, Dolores Claiborne. It was Gerald's Game and something else.
But he makes a point in saying like, they're actually at the same time. Where he hadn't really done that as like overtly before? Is that the...
No. Yeah, okay. No, he hadn't really done that. But a lot of his books, and I know that there's probably people who have been keeping up on Stephen King a lot more than I have. But yeah, a lot of his books take place either during the same time or in the same sort of physical location. So yeah, Gerald's Game and Dolores Claiborne take place during the same set of days, where the main plot does, because Dolores Claiborne jumps around a lot time-wise, like, it has a lot of flashbacks and stuff like that. But Castle Rock was also the location of a couple of the, books, like I think it was the town in actually one of the books that he wrote.
Yeah.
Which was I believe it is Needful Things. Yeah.
I haven't read any Stephen King books except for The Shining. I haven't seen a lot of the films, honestly. Uh-huh. So than The Shining.
Castle Rock, I'm reading the Wikipedia for it. Castle Rock first appeared in King's 1979 novel, The Dead Zone. Okay, I knew that. And has reappeared as late as his 2013 novel, Dr. Sleep, and 2014 novel, Revival. The name is taken from a fictional mountain fort of the same name in William Golding's 1954 novel, The Lord of the Flies.
Okay, yeah.
King, a native of Durham, Maine, created a trinity of fictional Maine towns, Castle Rock, Derry, and Jerusalem's Lot as central settings in more than one work. Yeah, Jerusalem's Lot is a fictional town that got its own book called Salem's Lot, but also reappeared in Dr. Sleep and a couple other places. So yeah, it's... also, a bunch of his books refer to Jerusalem's Lot, which is The Shining, The Dead Zone, Body, Pet Cemetery, Dolores Claiborne, Dreamcatcher, Dr. Sleep, Revival. The last three books in the Dark Tower series, which you could interpret the Dark Tower as being like fan fiction of his own work written by him. Like the Dark Tower like references his other works in a lot of ways while also being in a fantasy reality that, oh God, this... Stephen King is really into himself.
Yeah. Well, the show doesn't pay too much attention. Like, the show is incredibly aware that Castle Rock is where, or Maine is everywhere, is like where everything happens. Like, like bad things have happened, but it doesn't, like, I don't know. I think it's a good thing that the show doesn't take huge chunks of time and like trying to like explain to you that different things happen. It's mostly just like offhanded mentions of like, you know, stuff like The Shining that existed, like an axe murderer or whatever. But they don't really, I don't know. I feel like it's more like the tone of the show makes you feel like the town is dangerous and weird things happen. It's less like, oh, that you have to know all the fiction and how everything's connected. It's more just like, you just know that weird things happen here all the time. Yeah, which is sort of the point of the show. Yeah,
there's a low level menace.
Yeah.
That happens at and it's every like a moment. Weird
explanation for some. It lets the show like tonally just do things where it's like, oh, somebody dies or like kills himself or something in the show.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, it's not explained because of the weirdness of the town, but it's just like, oh, tonally that makes sense in this town because it's a strange town. And bad but things happen.
I would say that some of the premise seems to be a love letter to Stephen King's work, and it's more than just an homage. It's absolutely directly referencing his stuff. So, and it was
yeah, I think to the names. There are characters related to people in his books. Yeah,
yeah. And I would say that somebody who's probably even more familiar with his work than I am is probably eating up this show with a spoon because it feels. It was nerd bait in that way. Like,
yeah, and I like, so I usually don't like stuff that has a lot of references just for like references sake, but this show has definitely has references, but it doesn't ever like clog up the narrative for me. Like, I'm never like, okay, we get that like Stephen King wrote a book. It's mostly like, oh, they're talking about like this book or what they're talking about, you know, like it or something, like the kids that went missing, stuff like that. So it's never too, like, I guess I feel like if you were to read this at like synopsis of the show, you might get worried, like, great, if I haven't watched or seen a lot of the Stephen King works, then I'm going to hate the show or be confused. But I haven't been confused and I haven't seen that many of his stuff. So I don't think it's that bad of a show in terms of that, which is good because I feel like that's something that it could easily do, and it almost gets there sometimes, but it could easily just get too like mucked up with references, but it doesn't. It has its own story, even though like it's really, I don't know. Basically, Apple and I have been talking about the show a little bit because we both like just finished the episodes like yesterday, the fifth episode.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like we're both sort of confused, not confused, but just like torn on like how to feel. We don't hate the show. But I feel like we both haven't really figured out if we super like it either.
Yeah, it's hard because my entry point for the show was, oh, they're going to feature Shawshank Prison in
show? That's a main thing in the show, yeah.
That's a main thing in the show. And for me, that's really interesting because, so people who haven't read Stephen King, Shawshank Prison is in the short story Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption, and then was a movie. And the movie was actually pretty faithful to the short story. And the short story didn't feel like a Stephen King short story because there was no supernatural elements, there was no horror elements, there was no thriller elements. It was just a pretty standard moral tale about comeuppance and cunning and planning and stuff like that. Like, it was actually pretty hopeful. It was part of a novella series called Different Seasons, and the subtitle for this short story was Hope Springs Eternal, so it was like the spring season, so it was very optimistic, I think, for a Stephen King short story. But in the show, the prison is very clearly wrapped up in the miasma of evil that this town seems to represent. The town
is like controlled almost by, like, everybody is touched by the prison in a way, because, like, you know, there's that scene with like is it Molly, right?
Yeah,
with all those kids doing the like courtroom mock trial thing. Trial, and then they were all like, yeah, like our dads are in Shawshank. And it's just like, it's just that, I mean, it's a kind of a little bit more of like a supernatural scene, but it still feels like, oh, all these kids just super know about Shawshank and like everything, like this entire town is like not under the control, but just like the influence of Shawshank is throughout this entire town.
And I kind of want to talk a little bit about that because I have personal experiences relating to living in the shadow of a prison.
Yeah.
My parents both worked for the New York State Correctional System, and we lived on the state housing on the grounds of two prisons that were the industry for the very small town that I lived in at that time. And I definitely understand it, and they definitely have modernized the concept a little bit for the show because the two prisons I lived near were state-run, meaning they weren't private. Whereas a lot of the show goes heavily, like, a lot of the show dances around the fact that this is a privately owned prison, which is a very separate thing because it means that taxpayers don't pay for it. It means a corporation pays for it. And there's definitely been a lot of news and writing about the carceral state in the United States, and that private prisons are basically profiting off of the incarceration of people. And it's,
yeah, which is one of, clear it's one that of the Shawshank most, is also, you know, doing.
Yeah,
and,
also
yeah.
doing.
Yeah.
And talks a lot about prison brutality. So in that way, it does make a lot of sense. And but it's interesting because that's a very mundane and realistic evil versus
right.
the supernatural evil
yeah,
in the show.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because it is really like, it's something way more understandable compared to, yeah, the other thing, like the kid and stuff like that. So
yeah, so... Yeah. It's really interesting to see that, but it's also really interesting because Shawshank Prison was not like that in the short story. So
right,
the fact
that's
that
what
it's
I was getting
been,
the feeling of, yeah.
Yeah, the fact that it's being wrapped up in, like, the supernatural and the private prison sort of thing, that's a very different turn from what I was kind of expecting in a lot of ways. And the prison definitely factors into... Yeah, like one of the main characters of the story, which is like, I don't even know what to call him because I don't think we actually know.
We don't. What, I mean, his name is just the kid. Is. They just call him the kid.
The kid,
yeah.
Or the prison guards call him like Nick. And the subtitles for the show, because I watch TV with subtitles
on. Yeah, I watched
on.
It with subtitles, yeah.
Yeah, they call him just like strange prisoner or prison.
Yeah,
prisoner.
It sort of changes. Because I think in the last episode it was definitely calling him the kid with a capital K, I think.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah.
But and before that they were calling him like strange prisoner.
Yeah. Because it's just yeah. It is weird that it is. I don't know. It's such a hard show to like interpret or not interpret, but just sort of like to have like a critical take on yet, I guess, because it's definitely one of those shows that it's like very much about like revealing a mystery, which I mean that's a lot of shows, but I just mean like it's such a slow burn and there's a lot of like confusing stuff that happens in flashbacks and stuff, and we just are slowly getting answers about that kind of stuff, and uh-huh. So it's really hard to, I feel like it's sort of fragmented in like an interesting way, but because it's so fragmented the narrative, I feel like I'm only really drawn to it so far because of like the tone is so strong and like the atmosphere of it. Like it reminds me a lot of Stranger Things, which I know is like Stephen King inspired, but it just feels like, okay, this town, there's something here. There's something going on. And I really want to know what it is. And these people that I'm watching, these characters like have know about things, and I want to hear them like talk about it, and they do over time, and that's what's like compelling. It's less so like, gosh, what is the kid exactly like? I mean, I want to know that, but it's like, it's not like, oh, what's the journey of the kid? I want to know like how he gets out of the prison or like how he got in there or whatever, but it's more about just like, what are all these like answers to these things I don't understand, which I think is, that's really weird for a show because it doesn't feel like that's the main point. It feels like that's sort of like a point around the main thrust of the story, but that's what's drawing me at the moment. Or maybe that is the point. I don't know. It's really confusing.
Yeah. It feels like a tone piece, like you said, versus a plot that's moving along until you get to the fifth episode.
The fifth episode
I started feeling like we actually got in the car and turned the engine on.
Right.
And now
finally.
We're actually starting.
And it's not like I was bored until then, you know, I'm not trying to say like, oh, it's a tonal piece. I don't actually like it. I do really like, I feel like I'm, like I said, compelled to
There's
watch
so much
it.
Setup.
Yeah.
There's so much setup though. And it's
There's
like,
just a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. The aura of menace that the town presents is a very like it's a Kingian idea that this place just exudes evil and malice due to some sort of agent, whether it be Christian ideology, which it seems to be the case here. Like we're talking, there's a lot more of like the devil and God and stuff like that as part of the show versus some of his other works, which are like aliens or some sort of like weird sci-fi sort of thing. It very much feels like I would say the closest thing that it comes to is Needful Things, which also takes place in Castle Rock, the same fictional town, where the devil basically comes to the town and basically, like, destroys everybody's lives.
Yeah.
Through people having, you know, gluttonous or hedonistic, libidinous desires, and basically just exploits that. And so I have a feeling that that's kind of where the show is going with this one, which is, like, that the kid is actually the devil or some demon of some description, because that seems to be heavily implied. But it is interesting that they're finally digging and starting to dig into that this town makes people sick and miserable, but whether it's the town or whether it's the fact that this kid is here,
right, is, I think, and I think the show mystery wants you to be like, is it just the town, because we've established the town sucks, or is it the kid, or is it both? Like, I think maybe it's really hard to read so far because we're only 5 episodes in. I think it's a 10 episode season and it's every Wednesday, so there's, like, you know, 5 more weeks. But, like, I wonder if it's trying to set up the town as in all these other, like, tragedies that happen that are like, that are at least seemingly unrelated to the kid. I wonder if it's trying to set that up to just be like, yeah, like, what is the difference? Like, isn't it like hard to tell what is directly caused by the kid or not, which is interesting. It's just hard because I don't know where the show is going. We really don't know where it's going, really. I mean, yes, the 5th episode ends with something a little bit more direct, but it doesn't, there's still big pockets of, like, mystery that I don't think will be explained in that through line, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
It's a weird show that just makes me think about the way, like, we were talking about this last night, I think, of I don't have, like, the actual interview somewhere, but there was a show, or, like, it was an interview with, like, one of the Westworld people, like, one of the creators, and they had said, like, they do like to write the show kind of in response to the way, like, Redditors, like, pick apart the show and have theories, and it's weird to have another show that seemingly feels like sometimes that it's got so many mysteries and questions and, like, what did you say? Like, you know, it kind of asks you to really pay attention to every scene just in case you find something hidden. Cause there are references to, like, the other King works, which also could be, you know, actually, like, you know, hints at what could be going on later. So it feels like one of those shows that definitely asks people to, like, you know, talk about it with people and consider and, like, come up with theories, that's a weird territory.
Would you say that this is the Stephen King version of Lost, maybe?
Yeah, that's actually, I did think about Lost. Yeah.
It well, feels it doesn't like hurt that one of the actors from Lost is literally in this show.
Who is it? Wait, who is from Lost?
The old prison warden.
Oh, duh. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, Lacey.
I mean, it also is produced by J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams. So. Yeah. The fingerprints are there. Also, it was really funny that once I got done with episode 5, Hulu suggested Lost to me.
Oh, really? That's funny.
To watch it, yeah. So
yeah, it feels like Lost in that way, yeah. Which, that's a tricky thing, because I don't like stuff that is all about, like, come up with your theories, and then we're like, we're going to figure out the show afterwards. Like, I want the show to have, like, a point of view and, like, a reason to, you know, have an episode. Like, I want it to have a narrative figured out. So it's tricky to
making things so abstract and so vague that anybody could come up with any crackpot theory versus an actual narrative that plays with nuance and ambiguity.
And like a
strategy. Those are two very different things.
Yeah, like a strategy to unearthing the narrative, unearthing the mysteries and the reveals. This, like, if you don't have that, then it just feels like you're asking questions and just answering them the next episode and just doing that forever.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. And I don't like Westworld, but Westworld does feel like that sometimes, where it's just like, oh, there's a bunch of questions and I guess they're just going to sort of leave them or only answer some of them. And it just feels like it's made for people to just go to forums or whatever, go to social media and talk about it, which I know that's sort of that's like a common thing, right? Because even, like, don't the Marvel shows on Netflix do this a little bit too, with, like, hints at, like, bigger stuff? Like, it's a lot of media, I think, these days in some way, at least a lot of, like,
media
television.
That's designed for engagement versus writing a complete story.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's necessarily bad. I just, it's hard to grapple with, I guess, because it makes me worried about maybe the future of the show, and also like it, hopefully the show gets to something before, because like I guess one of the things I really don't like about Westworld is it does, it feels like there's a lot of questions in the first season, and then the second season finally is like, okay, here's where this story is actually going finally. And I don't want this show, I don't want Castle Rock to be a bunch of questions for 10 episodes and then finally do something, because then it feels like a waste of time.
Yeah,
and that's what I'm a little worried about.
I also think that it has a lot of opportunities to really dig into saying something about something, but because it seems to be so into Kingian horror, that it does, I don't feel like it's going to take a really nuanced approach to that, because, which is funny because I definitely like horror that plays on having both a element of what the horror is about, but also says something about.
Right. Isn't that like the beauty of the, what is it, that film from recently, the horror film about like, gosh, what is it called? I haven't seen it.
Get Out?
Get Out, yeah.
You have to, number one, you have to fucking see that.
But isn't that why people like that? It's like, it's a horror movie, but it totally has something to say.
About, well, because it draws on the fact that the supernatural and the horror elements draw on what is actually terrifying about real life anyway. And I feel like this show could have done that at so many moments.
Yeah, I mean, the main character is a black character.
He's a black guy.
Surrounded by just a bunch of, like, white people.
and he's around, he's in a town full of white people.
Yeah.
And they absolutely 100% comment on that a lot. And it's very clear that he is struggling with racism, but the show really doesn't go anywhere with that. It just keeps falling back on this idea this town is just evil versus like, well, no, it's full of white people in Maine, in rural Maine.
Yeah, but it never has anything to say about that, at least yet. It keeps pointing it out. Like, they're, you know, but I just, because, I guess, like, for context a little bit, like, it is, he's the main character, and like people think he killed like his father, and so like he, and we don't know either as like the, as viewers, I guess. But like it's so it is something where it's like a lot of people are like looking at him when he like walks, you know, through the streets of Castle Rock.
And that's not like, that's the unreal part.
Yeah.
Because guess what? If he is a black guy in an all white town,
people are already doing that.
You don't need to give them a reason.
Yeah.
That he's,
so it's hard to tell.
A murderer, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to tell if the show is like, do you know that that's like part of what it's like, or do you are you just saying this is just like people, because it only is existing because people think he did something bad.
Yeah, and that sort of gives a very convenient cover to his outsider status versus digging into what really makes him an outsider, which is that he is an adopted black kid in a mostly white town. And you're given a more plausible reason that isn't racism, which is that, oh, he might have killed his father. He can't remember what happened.
And you don't know either, viewers, so that is weird. Maybe these people know something that you don't and he doesn't, you know?
Maybe they're justified in feeling
like... He hasn't really put the other people in a very critical light yet, other than oh, that's really weird that they're looking at him. That's it. Like, so, I guess the part that I'm still confused about is just, like, it points it out that he's different, but it doesn't do anything with it yet. Or maybe it won't. I don't know.
Well, that's pretty typical for Stephen King's work, too.
Yeah.
Like, that's, his books are terrible about race. They are terrible. Like, that is something that his, on top of, like, misogyny and stuff like that, but his books are terrible about race. And I also thought they were going to dig in a little bit into, they were very obviously setting up the fact that private prisons are bad.
Yeah.
But then also this prison is largely full of white people again, but it does have issues with guards and guard violence. And you get the fact that this is a very disgusting, horrible, inhumane place, but then like sort of centers it around the idea that, oh, it's because this town is evil and this place is evil. And this is, versus digging into the fact that private prisons are horrible in real life. So it's, again,
it's a confusing show for me so far, and not in a, like, a frustrating way yet, but it's on the verge of that, which is just, I don't know. I don't know how to take Castle Rock yet. It's just, it's a strange Same. Show. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I, it's really interesting, and I definitely do appreciate some of the touches, like the fact that, I do appreciate, I think it's really funny that they included actors that were in previous King,
yeah, you know, King even the products, last like, one, which is funny. Like, I just think it's funny what? That, like, the guy who played, like, Pennywise, yeah. Like, he just is in this film, or in this show. It's funny.
Also, as the creepy guy, like, yeah. He just get roles as the being the creepy guy.
Like, I actually thought that was, I didn't know that, I forgot it was him, but I was like, oh, wait, he's just the guy that played Pennywise in the, like, the last King film. Like, that's, yeah.
And then you have Sissy Spacek, who is yeah. in Carrie. I know that there's probably somebody some other else.
Oh, I believe, well, no, the Pangborn guy is a sheriff, like, from other works, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Sheriff.
It's not the same Alan actor, Pangborn, but yeah.
But it's the same character.
Same character. I mean, there's the niece of, right, of,
the niece of the guy from The Shining.
Yeah. Jack, whatever. Yeah.
Jack, whatever. And she makes a mention of that in the show. And I felt like that was kind of that was funny. I thought that was a little bit funny.
Yeah.
But also a little bit on the nose of like, oh, yeah. she's just related. She's just the niece of the guy from The Shining. Oh, okay.
And then she's also like nosy too. Like, yeah. Like it's just, yeah. It's,
Yeah.
It's not too distracting, but it's there.
It's there. And that's definitely something that did come up in it. And we were talking about with our other friend, Celine, last night about this, where, like, it's definitely a concept in it where the town that this all happens in has its, like, sort of, like, has its claws in people. But she brought up, well, no, it was, like, this 3,000-year-old alien that was making the town like this. So we're trying to, you know, it does tie into what we were talking about earlier, just, like, is it the town? Is it the devil? Is it what, you know, what's going to be happening with this? But I'm glad that we're starting to finally get somewhere with this yeah. show.
I
want it to do something.
Yeah. It needs to do something because you can't just keep, like, slowly unraveling mysteries that are attached to a larger mystery without just a main story to go through first. Like, you need characters to, like, empathize with first and, like, have their yeah. own, like, arc. And then have other mysteries around it. You can't just have a bunch of mysteries.
Yeah. And I mean, we're starting to get some places where we're starting to realize that, like, the big mysteries are, what is the kid and how is he impacting the town? We have Henry Deaver in that he was missing for 11 days and his father is dead, or his father died. But how did his father break his back in the first place? Because we do know that the psychic lady,
Molly, yeah.
Molly, killed him.
Killed him, yeah.
Although we don't know why. Although I'm starting to get the gist that Henry's father was abusive in some capacity.
Which they also haven't.
But we don't know yet.
Yeah.
But we don't know. So the two big mysteries are, what is the kid? What was Henry Deaver's deal? What happened with his dad? Did something happen with his mom?
Well, I guess part of the issue with the show 5 episodes in having a hard time getting to these questions is it essentially did a lot about the Shawshank thing and like wonder and then like getting really close to like, private prisons are bad, and then literally just killing that.
Yeah.
Like, and actually now we're never literally gonna go back killing there, that.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's and I bet that storyline is sort of over, which is kind of weird. I mean, it starts off it results in something that will be important later on, but it does actually just completely kill that story.
Yeah. So Castle Rock, how do we feel about it?
Yeah, I feel like it was like 30 minutes of us just being confused, so apologies, I guess. But we just don't have any super, I don't know, concrete thoughts on it yet. I'm sure we'll return to it.
It's definitely interesting. Yeah. I will say that it's interesting, and it's definitely playing with some very Kingian elements of like,
yeah,
what's the nature of evil? What does evil look like? Which is almost always supernatural or sci-fi and never like super mundane. The presence of supernatural powers like psychics and pyrokinesis and telekinesis and things like that.
There has been shows that have been slow like this that I haven't been interested in, so I think there's something to Castle Rock, you know? Yeah. So I think that's it's a good sign. I just, you know, there's stuff that it needs to touch on, I think, and otherwise I'm going to feel a little disappointed. So
I think there, it's interesting because King's stuff is coming in a time where, like, everybody has been, I think it was a show that maybe would have worked so much better 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
I mean, don't you think that, like, Stranger Things sort of is, like, a big factor? Did a better job? Yeah.
Yeah, Stranger Things has happened. The revival of Twin Peaks happened.
Yeah, Twin Peaks, yeah.
There was also another, like, short-lived show that ran for 2 seasons called, what was it called? Like Quiet Pines or
something like that, right?
Something like that. That
but then
was on
also
Fox.
Even like True Detective,
was,
right? Like True Detective
yeah,
even
exactly.
takes a similar idea.
So we're in a time where prestige television has rapidly outpaced this kind of show and done a better job with it. And so I wonder if the show would have been so much better like 5-10 years ago.
Yeah.
For sure.
It doesn't feel dated. Yeah. It just feels like, okay, yeah, we know what's going on here. You can't just do the same thing anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, you have to step it up. You have to innovate. You have to do something
really
different.
Which, 5 episodes in, I'm willing for that to happen later on. I'm not ready to give up on it yet.
Oh, no, yeah. I'm going to keep watching it because I love trash and I love shoving it into my mouth. But, like, yeah, it's really interesting. It's just, there's definitely some flaws there. There's definitely some issues. But we'll stick with it because I think Bill Skarsgård has creepy-looking eyes.
Yeah,
so,
he doesn't blink. Yeah.
He doesn't blink. That must be the hardest acting job, to just stand there and not blink and look creepy. And yeah. So.
Speaking of not blinking, do androids blink? Do they need to blink?
Is this a segue, Tyler?
It's a segue to Detroit Become Human, obviously.
Yeah.
Now I'm really wondering, like, do androids actually need to... I mean, they need to blink because they gotta look human.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only reason. It's not because they actually have to, like whatever. What is
wet their eyes.
Yeah, wet their eyes.
Yep, so
yeah.
That's what blinking is for.
Yeah.
To wet. Well,
I almost said refresh
on
their eyes, which is a lot more mechanical.
But that makes more sense. Detroit Become Human. We're not actually going to talk about the game itself.
We both
so
haven't
much.
Played it either, so it's
But we've been talking about kind of the fandom that's around this game.
My Twitter feed is full of so much art between, what is it, Hank and Connor?
Connor, the android.
Yeah.
Connor, the android.
And Hank, the, like, detective or something, right?
Yeah. He's a detective.
It's all
grizzled detective.
Yeah. So they're apparently gay for each other, so that's mm-hmm. that's all the art I see.
Yeah. I don't think they are in the game.
They aren't? I guess they're not in the game, but then it also sounds like the actors would like them to be.
Yeah, but, you know, fat chance having a gay man couple between an android and a police detective in a game made by David Gage.
Yeah, because that would mean he would have to write a good game, so. But, yeah.
But it seems that this game, which I think kind of the arc of this, of our kind of interest in this, was that, okay, so Detroit Become Human came out, and it was sort of kind of a, you know, a very typical David Cage showing where that half of the critics absolutely uncritically loved it, and the other half of the critics, the ones
like
that we tend
movie.
To be friends with. It's like a movie. It's so amazing.
Actors
oh my god,
are in
it's
it, and they're like emoting and it's got writing that in it like yeah, I just,
it's about the struggle.
It's got writing is my
yeah. But it's like, and then the other half you know, of critics, the ones we tend to be friends with, were like, this is blatantly offensive on every considerable level. It steals from actual human rights movements and civil rights movements and, you know, appropriates the language and the ideas and the
imagery,
symbolism
and
stuff like that. And,
I mean, not to mention also when this game came out, I mean, another big thing too that made me sort of disregard it is that David Cage is garbage, so.
David Cage is garbage and his studio is full of, like, labor violations and sexual harassment and things like that.
The game has a lot of stuff like kind of weighing it down, but yeah, so it's just
but then we saw this fandom spring up around it,
right, which has been so confusing because it's like I mean, you're allowed to like, you know, Detroit Become Human, but it's just, I'm surprised that, because I don't think there's ever been this big of a fandom around any of his other games. And for some reason, this one, there's just so much art. There's like fanfics and like people like making, the edits like on Instagram of just like, you know, like music filled, like little clips of segments of the game, like scenes from the game. Like that's a hugely popular thing, apparently, for Detroit. Compare like, mm-hmm. And that's actually, the edit thing is funny because that doesn't actually happen a ton for other games, like not even Overwatch. There's not like a ton of Overwatch ones, but there's a ton of Detroit ones, which is weird. So people really like Detroit Become Human, and it's strange. And I think it baffled both of us. So,
because we were like, do these people not have any idea about David Cage? Which is very true. Like,
yeah, there's, that's all, yeah.
You can play a game and not know anything about who made it, because that, I mean, we sometimes forget that we're a part of a games critic circle space environment where we're always talking about this stuff, but the random person who sees Detroit Become Human being streamed on Twitch doesn't necessarily know anything about David Cage or who he is or other games he's made.
There's definitely people I follow on Twitch who are like, I'm just going to play this new game that everybody's streaming, and it's like a game where it's like a TV show. That's all they know. Like, it's just like, yeah, it's a game that looks realistic. It has like, you know, I don't know if it's episodic in like format in the game, but
it,
you know,
it's got three different like storylines. Yeah. So it's episodic in at least that
it
way.
It definitely felt like let's essentially watch a show together, but it's a game. Isn't that amazing and novel? And that's the part that is like, oh, I've already like went through that with like Heavy Rain and stuff. So I guess I was sort of past that like novelty. And also I already don't like David Cage's writing, so it was just really hard for me to understand that people have found something to like about Detroit.
But here's the thing, is we were kind of ready to write this off as like just a weird fandom that doesn't understand kind of David Cage's work or what's going on.
Which was kind of frustrating for us, I think, too, because we were ready to be like, you know, it's really annoying how people, not annoying, but it's just like, it's hard.
It's frustrating
that people don't realize like what David Cage is doing and not doing and still thinking the game is good, which is a whole thing. But yeah, so I guess.
But Geeta Jackson over at Kotaku, good friend of ours, wrote a whole piece about the Detroit Becomes Human fandom.
She actually talked to those people, so.
Yeah. You say to those people, such like,
those people who really like Detroit.
Yeah, but it seems that the fandom for the game, really, some of the fandom really does actually understand how bad the game is, but has sort of mined the interesting parts of it and taken the parts that they find ameliorating or usable in some way, kind of like picking through the trash and finding a piece of scrap
which
metal
is like,
that you can use to build a car.
I mean, isn't that
like
often
that.
What like fan fiction ends up being? Is
yes,
like, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Fan art and fan fiction are transformative works in that if you have a displeasure with a piece of shit piece of media, you can still fashion it into something for your own purposes and elevate it well beyond whatever that initial piece of media was not doing or doing badly.
Right.
And so in that way, I find that really interesting. People have managed to make a David Cage game good.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing is, it's like it's weird because I haven't been super into this before, like Overwatch. So with Overwatch, there is definitely stuff where it's like, that's not, you know, there's nothing written there, but I like that fans sort of has taken this as like the headcanon or the canon.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but Overwatch isn't like horrible in a lot of ways compared to like Detroit. So it's like,
because there's no story.
Yeah, there's not much. Well, yeah, it's like no story, and it's not trying to do like the Holocaust, like Android Holocaust kind of stuff that Detroit does. So I guess it's
not
just,
as many. I would say it's doing the like Android racism thing.
Yeah, it does Android racism,
but it's not as present.
Yeah,
it's not as present in the game as Detroit Become Human, which has like one of the androids fully quoting Martin Luther King.
Right. So I guess I just, it's surprising to me that people have figured out how to make the game like redeemable for what they can
find.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, which is based solely around Hank and Connor's relationship.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, that's really interesting. And I'm just surprised, I guess, because I just didn't think that big of a fandom would come up around this game. I knew obviously there's going to be people who like it, but I'm just surprised. I mean, one of the big things that first got us talking about this, which is in the article, is that person who got the tattoo of the numbers.
And that was interesting. Number one, because the androids in the game themselves, which I didn't know until Gita's article mentioned it,
they don't even have the thing that this person tattooed.
But they still got it anyway. But somebody did go on to mention in the comments that that the game does borrow heavily from actual Holocaust stuff. So yes, it still is an extremely offensive thing to do. On that level.
And I think that was kind of our thing too with this, is we saw that tweet and we thought wow, okay, Detroit fandom, that's a little weird. That's pretty bad.
Extra.
Yeah, but it sounds maybe that's a little bit more rare for people to completely not understand what the game is trying to do. It's maybe. Yeah. So, but I mean, obviously those people still exist, but I just, it seems like it's not as bad. It's definitely there. I guess the part that just was a little bit more eye-opening was I guess these people do really know that the game isn't really that great, but they still like stuff about it, which is okay.
Yeah. The thing is that from my experiences in fandoms, what little experiences I have had is that there's always going to be a mix of people that get something out of the work and understand how horrible it is, and people who uncritically engage with the work. And that's even true for people who aren't in a fandom per se.
Yes, yeah.
It's just that fandom tends to exacerbate a lot of the more fanish qualities and not as much as the critical aspects of it. And because sometimes to be a fan of something, you have a lot of people in a fandom who want you to kind of really infuse the love of that work with this passion, and that's why you're making all this stuff. Whereas I feel in some ways some of the media is so bad that it feels like a lot of the people who are in the fandom always get that it's bad, and it's sort of like a support group for people we really hate how this works, but we're gonna make it better, but we still understand that the original work is shitty and terrible and has problems. And where you get a lot of the fandom friction is when those two kinds of people clash.
Yes, yeah.
And friction run up against each other. And it's that tension that has made being a critic in fandom spaces really difficult, because for every 10 people that you have that are making Hank and Connor fan art that understand that David Cage and his game is a piece of shit, you have people who, you have the one or two people who are, or even more than that, who are tattooing numbers on their yes, arms and want you to love Detroit Become Human, and they don't want you to criticize the original work. And that's where kind of some of the problems happen, is because when I want to engage with a piece of media, my way of working through my feelings with something, and this is a lot of times why fan art and fanfic is so necessary, is it's a way of working through your feelings that you've gotten from this piece of media. My way of working through my feelings with a piece of media is to critique it and to really think about, well, what's it saying? What's the themes? What is in the text of this? What is actually here? And how am I going to talk about it versus what a lot of fanfic and fan art does, which is, I see what's here, but here's how I feel about it. I think she's cute,
so I'm just going to draw art of that,
Or I wish the story had gone this way. Or
I'm
going to
write
it
this way, yeah.
I'm going to write it this way, or this character didn't get enough time, so I'm going to pull it apart. I love this series, I'm going to write what happens to the characters 10 years in the future if I put these characters into a coffee shop. And it's a different way of working through your feelings about something.
It's still critical too, Yeah. It's still thinking, it's still saying okay, I don't really like this. And that right there is a criticism. So.
Yeah. But
I guess sometimes it feels it's almost like it's, sometimes fandom feels like it's protective.
Protective. Yeah. Yeah. There are fans who are protective of something versus understanding that what they're working with is problematic in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to be a critic and to critique something.
Because generally and then deal you with don't fans. Feel you don't have that protectiveness over a piece of work, and you also because you're disconnected, you're looking at it with all the other pieces of work in the media, you know what I mean? Like you're not
critical
just looking,
lens.
Yeah, through a critical lens. Like you're never looking at like just Detroit and being like, well, let's just look at this one game. Like you're always looking at like what are even like, you know, here's other games that have done the similar thing kind of thing. So, or like other games with better writing or other David Cage games. Like, so it's
or David Cage himself.
David Cage himself or his company and stuff like
how
that.
Does
yeah.
This, how does this handle race? How does this handle women? How does this handle abuse?
It feels
you
like
know,
some
like,
people are just like, no, we don't need to talk about that stuff. We just need to look at the game. And that's where it starts to get uncritical and it starts to verge into like fandom that is, it's just harder to deal with. I don't know, it's I don't want to say it's bad, it's just hard to because like obviously you're allowed to just like a thing I you know but
yeah.
It's just really hard because we both don't work that way I guess, so it's hard to
yeah
it's hard to just like watch people be into something that we've already figured or we critically think is not great, so it's just it's a, I don't know, it's a weird thing because it happens to more than just like Detroit, it happens to lots of other stuff too. That like a lot of,
yeah.
Especially a lot of stuff in games too. Like there's a lot of games that are just like, that's just like, this is, you know, like Bioshock Infinite was one of them where people just like super liked it. And it was like, you know, if you looked at it critically, it was a horrible game and it's just,
yeah.
And then people still think like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to see what like Ken Levine's next game is. And it's like, who actually cares? But it's,
yeah.
You know, it's just hard because it's a really weird space because I think there's something to be said about like being able to just be like, you know, I kind of just like this thing. I don't really want to talk about it critically. Like, I just kind of think Detroit is cool, and I think like Connor and Hank are like cute, like together. Like that's it.
I think that's fair,
yeah.
And I think that it's fine because people can make their own spaces for that sort of thing.
Yeah,
it's just hard when you factor in something like social media,
mm-hmm.
where all of those things are sort of coexisting at once, because then you start to get the people that jump on your criticism posts or jump on your fan art posts, and it starts mixing up a lot because all of those things are out there in the public space, so they all have to be taken as like sort of equally valid,
yeah.
And validated, and it doesn't always work. It doesn't always kind of
it's
like
a confusing space, especially since
space.
Like you it's hard because like sometimes you'll take inherent criticism of like, okay, everyone's drawing Hank and Connor, so people just really think Detroit is really good, you know? Like, and that's why I think Gita's article is important, because you get to hear from those people that are like, you know, like, no, I, you know, I draw it, but, or whatever. I like write fan fiction, but I do understand it's bad. So it's just one of those things where it's like with social media, I think, like you said, it's just hard to tell. Like, do people understand the like full weight of this game at all? Because like when you look at that tweet of somebody getting that tattoo, it's like, okay, this person has no clue. Like
about
yeah.
what the game is actually
right.
saying or doing.
So it's hard
and
when you just see an art or something or a fanfic. It's just like, does this person have any clue? Like what's happening in this game?
But I think that's also a problem of how society treats media, is that like a lot of society wants you to just treat media products as products and entertainment,
yeah,
and to not really think
yeah.
about it and not think about it beyond that. And there's also a lot of problems with media underrepresenting, you know, people of color, trans people,
mm-hmm.
gay people. And so mining a relationship that doesn't really exist in the text out into like fandom space often happens because there's just not a lot of gay characters
right.
to begin with.
Especially, and
a
it
lot
gets
of this
dangerous when like the companies sort of feel like, I feel like they almost support it. Like, yeah, we're going to like wink at you.
Well, that's
yeah, I know,
baiting,
queer baiting, but
yes,
like I
yes,
just and
yeah.
that's what that came up in Gita's article, but it's just like my point is that like you gotta, it's important to be critical of stuff a little bit, you know, even if it's like,
yeah,
I know it's weird because I don't want to say like you have to be critical of things, but it's you can, there are reasons why you would want to be, because it can get really dangerous, because you don't like, if you really like Hank and Connor, wouldn't you like a game where that actually is the story? And so, like,
yeah.
Shouldn't you think about that? Or, I mean, you don't have to, but I guess, you know, like, consider it. Because this game
yeah.
this game didn't do that. This game absolutely did not do that, and you like it for you, you know, like you like it for that reason, not for the reason they didn't do it, but you like that it could exist. So it's hard.
Yeah, but it's hard because none of us has the money to make games the things that we want.
We're not
to,
David
which
Cage,
is, you know,
with an entire company.
We're not David
Cage.
Basically, don't give money to David Cage. That's, give money to people who are doing this.
It's
sort
like
of
after
stuff
his comments for me, I was just like, oh, I'm not going to give him attention. I'm not going to like pay attention to this game and talk about it really because I really don't like David Cage. So it's and I think that sometimes people just don't take it that way. They just don't care or don't think about it that deeply, which it's just sometimes it's just like you said, like we said earlier, it's just sometimes frustrating because it's like if you really want something to be better, you have to kind of think about it that way sometimes because it's gonna get you to, you know, to be able to like understand like who not to really give attention to and why and understand that some games are just like bad.
It's a struggle. And I wish that all of us in fandom could coexist peacefully because I think that criticism is just as needed as fan works and things like that. And there's people that do both. I definitely am somebody who does both. It's just, I wish we could get everybody kind of in that same place versus, you know, of being a fan and loving something, but also being able to point out the problems with it and to, you know, and I can understand there's some people that, you know, want to just jump into something and just.
I mean, we both
like,
do
not,
that with our own things too. We both just like
not
stuff
think
that,
about
like,
it.
I, yeah, that's kind of like bad, stuff. But it's I like this song or whatever.
I like it. Or it's trash, but whatever. I like it. But part of just saying, "Well, I just want to like it," also means that you do still have to recognize that stuff has problems and also not get numbers tattooed on your arm.
Yeah, don't do that. Just don't do that at all. Like, regardless of what game or film or whatever, just don't do that.
Tattoo numbers on your arm. Like, just don't do that. Like, this. And I think that that's one of the things that we should work towards in the future is giving everybody a better literacy of media and critical lenses and history so that people come into this stuff, into these works, and be able to spot that stuff. Like, David Cage gets a pass so much because I think a lot of people have no idea about what he's.
People don't know his other games. A lot of people playing Detroit are really into it too. Like, have no idea he's made games where people look real and it's like a TV show. Like, I don't know. I think, and the other thing I think too that is important about like the media literacy thing too is to like kind of like we're doing here in the podcast is just embrace that it can be confusing. You know, like sometimes stuff is just weird and it's hard to like reconcile with things. And that's just a part of media and like interpreting it. It can just be weird. And it's kind of it's sometimes kind of scary or like it's just makes you maybe uncomfortable in some ways, too. But that's just how things are. And grappling with that is kind of always a challenge. And like it's kind of fun sometimes, but it also can not be fun. So it's just it's a whole thing.
Yeah, basically. I mean, that's a good mantra for everything. It's just like, just grapple with stuff sometimes. And it might be confusing. It might not have all the answers, but it just makes
I feel like that's our whole, even like, I mean, it's less offensive, I guess, but that is also like our Castle Rock thing of like, we don't really know how to feel about it. It's kind of weird. And
so let's just talk about it. Let's have a conversation about it. So, well, we didn't really accomplish much of anything this week, but we think that we had a pretty good discussion and I'm okay with that. So, Tyler, where can we find you on
You can
internet?
Find me on Twitter at Tyler Kolp, TYLERCOLP. I'm also on Twitch, which is twitch.tv/OtterXPop. What? Sounds like you're about to say something. Okay.
No, go.
I'm also like all our streams, because we stream there, all our streams are on my YouTube channel, which is just youtube.com/Tyler_Kolp.
You can find me on Twitter, Apple Cider Witch, and on Twitch as Apple Cider Witch. We also both stream at twitch.tv/BlizzardWatch now if you want to see us play Blizzard games. Also, if you have any questions or comments about any of the stuff we talk about on the show, you can email us at makeitsoundfiction@gmail.com. That's all the words spelled out. Also, if you love the show, rate us and review us on iTunes. It's super helpful. We'll read your review out loud on the show. Also, if you love the show, tell your friends, talk about it on social media, link us, retweet us, you know, all that good stuff. It really helps us out. We really love having new viewers. Our last episode was like
huge numbers. If you didn't listen to it, you should totally listen to it.
Totally yeah. listen to it. Find out why everybody's screaming about World of Warcraft. Yeah, if we have a lot of great fans of the show already, and we're super happy about it.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, even if you just, like, you know, retweet the episode, that helps too, you know, so.
Totally yeah. helps us, so. And thank you, everybody who has been doing that. It's really great to see it, so thank you so much for supporting Thanks. The show. Okay, and we will be back next week, so see you.
Bye.